Chapter 4 Vampire Startup.
Dudes, this is not what I signed up for. Where are my fangs? Why can't I turn into a bat? This sucks.
Silence, minion.
Mary turns her nose up with turbocharged hauteur and places one hand on her hip, theatrically poised, as she faces down Evan.
There will be no whining among the pigs.
Vampires.
Goats, chickens, whatever.
She waves it off. Alex stares at her, enthralled. They had to duct tape Mary to her Aeron and lecture her for 6 hours straight before she could wrap her head around just enough of the core theorem, as he and Evan had named it, to open her inner eyes to whatever they were all seeing in the visualizer. But eventually she got it. Vampirism becomes her. Her skin is paler and clearer than before, her hair more golden blonde, as if some personal contrast slider has been turned up, and the city slicker uniform of sharp jacket, black dress and heels goes well with the territory. The effect of turning post-human on the boy pigs isn't quite as obvious. They already had the self-aware swagger of the masters of the universe, apart from Alex. But the change has bestowed an odd desmodontid magnetism on the scrum mistress, and Alex is an iron filing trapped in her field.
"We need to try the blood thing. I'm dying for a drink,"
says Dick. It's true. Every last one of them has become aware of an unpleasantly intimate thirst since the change, a thirst unslaked by water or champagne. Denial isn't an option.
"Where are our fangs?"
Evan deadpans compulsively.
"Who the fuck knows? Maybe they don't come out until we hunt."
Dick hunches around his stomach as if he's in pain.
"Teeth don't grow overnight," Evan says more thoughtfully. "Maybe we ought to book a dental X-ray?"
"We could corner one of the cleaners,"
suggests Janice. The scrum's sys-admin got with the program immediately, and now she's even scarier than ever. Her hair spikier, her trouser suits sharper. Alex half expects her to whip out a red and black armband and announce that backsliders will be shot.
"Use the hypnosis thing. Even if it doesn't work, how are they going to identify us? We all look the same to them, pasty-skinned Anglos in suits." "Have they found Mr. White yet?"
Alex had coughed to telling the smirking chimp in the bathroom to get lost during the daily stand-up meeting. That was when the sprint on vampirism had been proposed and unanimously actioned as an emergency spike. Oscar's discreet digging had subsequently revealed that one Barry White from the Rare Earth Futures desk had not returned to work since the evening of the confrontation. According to the police, he was last seen booking a one-way flight to Mataveri Airport on Easter Island.
"Not so far."
Mary wrinkles her nose.
"That's a loose end we'll have to tie up. What were you thinking, Alex?"
"I was thinking I had sunburn and someone had slipped me some acid."
Mary turns away dismissively, focuses on Janice instead, eyes gleaming.
"The cleaners are a bad idea, Janice. We might, have you ever watched Buffy? End up tearing them limb from limb, or losing control and killing them. Cleaners have team leaders and contract management. Families, even. It could get messy unless we know exactly what we're doing. I think we need to deal with this in a business-like way. Oscar?"
Until now, Oscar has been sitting in his office, at the far end of the boardroom, door flung wide so he can watch from afar. It's a pose he has, one ankle crossed over the other knee, brooding in his supervillain's swivel chair, a horribly expensive luxury item modelled after a Blofeldian excess from one of the earlier Bond movies. Now he stands. 40-ish, bald and skinny, and intensely animated, Oscar is both the scrum's leader and their interface to the institution they are embedded in. They all know it, and as soon as he steps forward, they all look towards him.
"Okay, people. Here's what I'm hearing. We have a huge opportunity, but it doesn't mesh with our deliverables list, and it certainly doesn't play to any of the user stories I'm seeing here."
He looks at Mary.
"It comes with certain costs attached, the stomach ache and sunburn, but it also comes with some remarkable value proposition increments."
Mary had sold him on it the instant she regurgitated Alex's get-lost anecdote.
and I think it constitutes a net benefit that we should add to our core skills matrix for all personnel."
Everyone nods, glassy-eyed, unable to look away. Oscar in full flow was charismatic even before they sat him down in front of Alex's tracer bullet demo and turned him into one of them. Now he's positively mesmerizing, able to turn the driest of spreadsheet statements into a Shakespearean soliloquy. "We need to explore the envelope of this new capability immediately, then determine how to apply it to our core production targets. We need to learn what it takes to deal with a stomachache. We need to explore ways and means of minimizing daylight exposure. We need to identify the existential threats we face and develop procedures that maximize our chances of surviving them. You've all seen the movies. You know what happens to the unprepared, the unfit? We are not going to be unfit. We are going to confront this challenge and surmount it together. For my part, I'm going to feed a stall warning up the pipeline and tap dance around it to give you a 1 week window of opportunity. I repeat, regular work is canceled for 1 week, and I'll do whatever it takes to cover for you while you get to grips with our new toolkit. Unless anyone wants more than that 1 week extension?" Nobody nods. "Good. So right now, you're going to sit down and we're going to brainstorm the stories we're going to generate tasks from for the 1 week sprint on vampirism. On this theme, you are the customers, and your work is going to define our deliverables. The definition of done for this sprint is, we will know what hurts us, we will know what helps us, we will know what we can do that we couldn't do before, and we will know what extra things we can do when we go back to business." He grins, toothily. Is it Alex's imagination, or are Oscar's canines longer than they were yesterday? Note that I didn't say back to business as usual, because I don't think we're going to be playing the same game again. We just gotta power up, people. And once we find out how big it is, we'll be in a better position to know how high we can raise our game.
Midnight in the sprint planning meeting. All the pigs and most of the hens are present, standing around the table to keep things moving. They've barricaded the door to the suite to keep the cleaners out, ordered in a pile of pizzas, for though the stomachache is ubiquitous and insatiable, the old mammalian metabolism still demands food, and Mary is keeping track on the whiteboard.
"Okay, what else?"
she demands, brandishing a red marker.
"Sunlight, threat or menace?"
"Thank you, Evan."
She swings to the board, writes sunlight, and circles it in yellow. After a moment, she adds rays.
"Well, I got burned," says Alex, "but only my hands and face."
"Protective clothing," mumbles Dick.
His suit probably qualifies as such, at least if it's his virginity he's trying to protect. It came from a charity shop, a coarse green tweed pig farmer's number, that is more effective dissident garb in this environment than any amount of tie-dye and patchouli oil.
"Hey, what about latex face paint like in Mission Impossible?"
Mary adds two linked circles to the board. Protective clothing and latex masks.
"Hats,"
offers Janice.
"Becca gave me a lovely new trilby."
"Hats" goes on the board.
"Keep it moving, people,"
Mary says briskly. Alex's attention wanders. He notices she's wearing opaque black leggings under her dress.
"Shouldn't we move the office down a few levels?"
he asks,
"and further away from the exterior?"
The Scrum's office is already shielded in the heart of the bank's building, well away from any possible exposure to laser microphones or long-lens cameras.
"I'll action that with Oscar, but that's not strictly a user story,"
she reminds him.
"Stories, people. Blood, animal or human?"
offers Evan.
"Good one. Does it have to be fresh from the artery, or can it be stored?"
This from John.
"I saw this film once," Alex stumbles momentarily. "In it, the vampire had taken over a local hospital. It was set in the Midwest and was using the blood bank. Jolly good."
Blood bank and freshly squeezed bull went on the board.
"Next." "Mind control."
Janice took her turn.
"We need to explore it. Can we all do it? How do we do it? What are the limits? What if the target is resisting?"
"Excellent points, one and all,"
Mary turns to the board and scribbles. Hypnosis, resistance, limits. After a moment, she scrubs out hypnosis and writes in brainwashing instead.
Anything else?
Alex rubs his jawline. It itches.
The mirror thing. How does it apply to cameras? Because if...
Nonsense, Alex.
Janice is nodding along with Mary.
We already know that one.
But...
Because I had to use FaceTime on my fucking iPad to do my makeup this morning. It can't fool cameras, or I'd be a real mess.
Janice holds up a cautionary finger.
Unless you swap the image right for left. Is that what you were wondering?
No, but...
Alex stares at Janice, then at Mary.
It's a mental effect. Whatever stops us seeing our reflections, it's in us, not in the mirror or the camera.
Huh. Mary sounds sceptical, but turns back to the board anyway and adds, face blindness.
Anything else?
Garlic. Coffins.
Holy water.
Anyone got a crucifix or going to Holy Communion?
Wait up. If you believe in the strict transubstantiation, then if the host and wine turns into the body and blood of Christ, does that mean it could fix the stomach upset? Or would it set fire to us?
Dude, consecrated ground. Also, holy water.
Mary doesn't interrupt the flow, but writes Jesus stuff on the board.
But what if someone invites you in?
I can settle that one, says Janice. The thing about needing an explicit invitation is nonsense.
She sounds a little too smug to Alex's ears. Let the right one in, goes up on the board. Right one is then struck out and replaced by wrong un.
Stakes,
says John. He is greeted by stony, unwelcoming silence.
Did I say something wrong?
There is an obvious joke,
Mary says tightly.
You're all thinking it, so you can pat yourselves on the back and keep it to yourselves. But in current company, if you say it aloud, I will have to make a determination whether it constitutes workplace harassment and or discrimination against persons of hemophagia. Am I clear?
Alex bites his lip. The moment passes. Nobody utters the words stakeholder management in any context, tasteless or otherwise. But he's managed to make his lip bleed, and the trickle oozing onto his tongue tastes like... No, it smells like... No, it reminds him of... Mary is saying something about teams and assigning a sprint backlog and prepping a new burndown chart and who takes on what roles. Alex shivers imperceptibly and tries to shut the memory of his first orgasm back in whatever dusty memory box it crept out of. This is no time to be distracted.
John, Dick, you're on brainwashing. Go find a bar and practice your pickup lines. Janice and Evan... You're taking blood bank. Those are tonight's tasks. Tomorrow, Janice can return the samples while Evan and Alex tackle the Jesus stuff items. If you need support, I'll pitch in. I'm going to take protective clothing and latex masks, but I've got some shopping for equipment to do first, so we can work on it tomorrow. I'll need one of you boys, and Dick and Alex can team on freshly squeezed bull. Okay, on to phase two. Let's start drawing up our work units.
A pair of vampires with clipboards walk into the acute receiving unit at a busy London teaching hospital shortly after 8 o'clock at night. One is male and one is female. They're both smartly dressed, with badges on lanyards around their necks. Everything about them screams outsourced private sector management, except it's 9 in the evening, and there is no way that consultants from Accenture or PwC would be seen dead working this late amidst the vomit and screams of the unwashed sick plebs. The male discreetly elbows his companion, pinstriped trouser suit, short spiky hair with racy violet highlights, and whispers,
"We should have come as doctors. All it takes is a stethoscope. How hard can it be?"
"Don't be fucking stupid,"
she hisses at him.
"What if somebody asked us to fix someone?"
"We could tell them they feel better. They'd believe it."
It was true. To everybody's astonishment, they'd sent John and Dick to test it. John because he fancied himself as a pickup artist, and Dick because he was clearly a hopeless case, the 20-something programmer most likely to still be a virgin. But Dick had scored with his first attempt. Despite his pig farmer's suit, questionable personal hygiene, bulging, watery, hyperthyroidal eyes and the miasma of squalid dissipation that trailed around behind him at all times, he'd slouched into a high-end club and squelched out again after half an hour, wearing the stunned, toad-like grin of a first-time winner in life's lottery, sandwiched between a pair of mistrustful, anorexic blondes, who clung to his arms possessively and glared daggers at one another across his prematurely thinning pate. John, aghast, had stuck around only long enough to obtain photographic evidence of the coup, then chickened out of his own chicken run and went home to commune with a bottle of limoncello instead, depressed by the ease with which Dick had devalued his expertise with the ladies.
"Yes, but that wouldn't be..."
Janice shuts up as a harried-looking bloke in blue scrubs marches briskly towards them.
"You can't wait here, you're blocking the..."
he begins, then stops as Janice stares into his eyes.
"Health and Safety Inspectorate Spot Check. We're here to verify that your unit is following approved hazardous waste disposal procedures during non-core business hours," she informs him.
"But you..."
"Believe it," she emphasizes.
The A&E nurse blinks a couple of times as he assimilates this new information.
"You need to go and talk to janitorial services, then. Not here. This is the triage and control post. You're in the way. We have ambulances."
"Which way?"
"There."
Their unwitting informant points along the corridor, past curtained-off bays and an empty stretcher.
"Turn left past the crash cart, through the double doors, third on your right."
"Thanks. Forget we were here."
Janice hauls Evan along behind her, hurrying to clear the area, lest a real emergency blow in, trailing too many medics and relatives and police officers to subdue by force of will alone.
"Now what?" mutters Evan.
"We ask more questions. Let's see, we're looking for the blood transfusion duty registrar. They'll be on call and the internal phone book will take us to them. They'll know where the blood components are stored. Probably a special refrigerator in a hematology lab, but there'll be supplies close to A&E.
"Where did you figure that out from? Did you work in a hospital before?"
"I used Google. Duh."
Badges, clipboards and self-confidence will get you past the human gatekeepers in a hospital, but they won't help you with the combination locks on the doors. But if you have a vampire's talent for convincing people that they want to help you, you can move around relatively easily. Just wait for someone to come along, then get them to invite you in. Over the next 20 minutes, Evan and Janice inveigle themselves into the hematology lab and corner the duty hematology technician. 40-ish, maternal-looking, and very surprised to see them standing in the doorway to the lab office.
"We're here to do a spot check on the blood fridge,"
Janice announces forbiddingly. Evan, standing behind her, holds his clipboard before him like a weapon.
"We are auditing supply levels and expiration compliance throughout the primary care trust, and we've been tasked with making spot checks on hematology services to monitor wastage. Where's your supply manifest? We need to do a stock take against it."
The tech looks surprised.
"Can I see your ID, please?" she asks. "Nobody told me to expect..."
"Here's my ID,"
Janice says, holding the faked-up laminated badge.
"You will recognize this as valid. There's no need to confirm it with management. Everything is in order."
"Yeah, baby,"
Evan leers over her shoulder.
"Supplies?"
The technician shakes her head.
"What do you mean?"
"Plasma. Platelets. Whole blood to hand for transfusion."
The technician frowns.
"Whole blood? Someone's misinformed you. There's a single unit of screened O-negative blood in the blood fridge by Theatre 1, strictly for emergencies, and about 6 units of various types in the resuscitation ward on A&E. But we don't handle bulk supplies here. We handle immunohematology testing and order in supplies from the blood bank on a per-patient basis as needed. And if they don't have enough, there's a blue light taxi service from the nearest NHSBT centre. We don't just keep units of whole blood hanging around unused. The stuff's too valuable and it has a short shelf life. You're telling me you run a fractional reserve blood bank?" "What?"
The technician is perplexed by Janice's incredulity.
"But you can't possibly imagine that..."
"Leave her,"
Evan suggests. The hematologist shakes her head and blinks at them, leaning away.
"Let me see your badges again. Who did you say you were from?"
The mind control thing clearly isn't working too well. Janice sighs, leans nose to nose with the woman, and slams the full force of her willpower into her.
Get a syringe and draw a sample from your left arm. I am a vampire, and I want to suck your blood.
Was that strictly necessary?
Shut up and drink.
Prosit.
Pro... Oh.
Pause.
Oh.
Jesus Christ.
Oh.
You're disgusting.
Pause.
Please tell me you haven't wet yourself.
No. Bitch.
Pause.
Look, there's a drop left in the tube. I can't lick it out.
Rinse.
Jesus fuck. That was amazing. Better than smack.
Better than sex.
Guess you've never had good sex, then.
Animal.
Dyke.
Pause.
It felt amazing. But I need more. There's one tube left. Can I have...
No, it's for Oscar and Mary.
Come on, there's 20 mils, we can split it. Tell them there wasn't...
You're not thinking this through, Evan.
What?
We've got a problem. According to Google, the NHS prices blood internally at £120 per unit, and a unit is only about a third of a litre. They never have more than about 10 days' supply in the blood and transplant services stores, and she just told us they track it to the individual unit on a per-patient basis. And I don't know about you, but I could get used to this stuff.
Shit. You know what that means, then?
Yes. We're going to have to convince Oscar to buy us a hospital. Which is why you're not to drink the rest of the merchandise. Shit's expensive.
A pair of vampires with clipboards walk into the back of a church in time for evening mass. They do not burst into flames, nor does the sight of the crucifix on the altar cause them to cringe or convulse. But the incense gives Alex a sneezing fit, at which point an elderly parishioner turns and glares at him with muted outrage. That is the worst reaction that makes it into the task-tracking grid on Evan's clipboard.
Dude, not cool. Try to look like you're praying.
How?
Copy the peeps in front of us.
Them over there, they seem to know what they're doing.
The building is cold and dimly lit, the air dank with the chill of autumnal stonework. It seems almost deserted, but for a small cluster of officiants around the altar and pulpit at the front, and a scattering of worshippers, mostly old. The music sounds doleful and strange to Alex's ears. As with many other natives of the British Isles, he has grown up in a family that fills in the religion question on the census forms with Church of England, but only bothers with the institution itself when they want something. An impressively traditional venue for a wedding, or a place in a highly rated C of E school for the offspring. Consequently, he has only the vaguest grasp of the format and running order of a service, much less the audience participation bits. Evan, for his part, is no better off. He clutches the dog-eared Book of Common Prayer with both hands, trying to make sense of the card with its cryptic list of hymns and page numbers.
"This makes no sense,"
Alex complains, but help is at hand. Evan pulls out his phone, a ridiculously hypertrophied slab of black glass, and googles. After a moment, he shoves it under Alex's nose.
"Follow this," he whispers.
They peer, shoulder to shoulder, through the narrow window, onto churchofengland.org's website, gaping in perplexity at an alien universe of liturgy and prayer. The service proceeds. There are prayers, there are hymns. There is a reading from the Holy Scripture. More prayers follow, and then the ritual preparation of the table.
"Are you up for the free booze?"
Evan asks, as he prepares to join the queue of communion participants forming in the aisle.
"No, I'll just keep track in case you burst into flames or something."
Alex, to be honest, is somewhat bored. The religious symbols at the front of the church are no more cringeworthy than they would have been a week ago.
"Coward."
Evan heads towards the queue. A few minutes later, he's back.
"Cheap wine, and not enough of it," he says.
"And the, Eucharist?"
"Tastes like chicken."
Evan elbows Alex in the ribs.
"Incoming collecting plate. Let's roll."
A pair of vampires with clipboards walk into a butcher's shop. Actually, it's not a shop. It's a stall in the central hall at Smithfield Market. It's a few minutes past 4 in the morning, and the wholesale market is already bustling with butchers, fishmongers, and restaurateurs, filling up crates and pallets with the day's meat produce. This is London's main wholesale meat market. No longer a live cattle market surrounded by abattoirs, but nevertheless a bustling hive of early morning commerce. The vampires have swapped their suits for jeans and suspiciously new white coats, purchased for the occasion from a work outfitter's. They slip effortlessly through the crowd of costermongers and their customers. But they have a dilemma.
"What exactly are we looking for?"
asks Alex.
"Blood. Fresh blood."
Alex's sigh is intended to be withering, but it's so much water off Dick's duck's-ass hairstyle. Dick is clearly in his element here. With his protuberant eyes and green plaid jacket, he fits right into place in the meat market, in a way that makes Alex wonder if there isn't something to the old legend of fey changelings. Despite being predestined for a life as a butcher, the baby was swapped at birth to fill the empty crib of a banker.
"Pig's blood?" he asks. "Or sheep? Or cow juice?"
"Don't be daft. Cow juice is milk."
"Look, let's just fucking ask, okay? Excuse me. Yes, you, sir."
"Eh? What you?"
The balding, middle-aged bloke in the white coat and rubber boots turns a suspicious expression on Alex. Alex stares into his eyes and grabs his attention.
"We need blood,"
he says simply, holding out the aluminum drinking bottle from his bicycle.
"Fresh blood, preferably from a cow. Can you sell it to us?"
What?
Dick raises a grubby finger.
"No questions, mate."
They have discovered that there is an interesting drawback to the mind control talent. It only works if you can supply a rationalization that the victim can make sense of. Tell a banker to get lost after a hard day's work, and they'll tell themselves that it's about time they ditched the high-stress job and went to live in a Buddhist monastery for a year. Tell an aspiring model in a club that you're a rich investment banker and she wants to shag you, and her mind's eye will fill with Ferraris. But a blunt assault on the senses, with no wheedling wedge to crack the doors of cognition apart, will result in some fight back. Alex realizes this and sends a quelling glance in Dick's direction.
"Heston Blumenthal sent us. We're with his TV production company, and we're sourcing material for a documentary on foods made with blood."
False enlightenment dawns on the victim's face.
"Oh, all right, mate. Come with me, I'll sort you out."
15 minutes later, Dick and Alex stagger out of the market, lumbered down with the weight of sloshing gallon containers of the red stuff. Pig, sheep, cow, and goat. Alex walks with one arm crooked protectively around his pocket, within which nestles a filched 20-mil medical sample tube, filled with the most exotic of sanguinary products. Venous blue human blood.
"Mr. Blumenthal specifically wants to try a recipe for teat carn that the Viet Cong are rumoured to have made using their own blood while besieged by the Americans. Yes, I know, it's disgusting. Would £100 help?" "I can't believe you tried to force him with no explanation."
Alex pauses to put down a gallon jug in order to wipe his forehead. Dick looks around nervously.
"Hurry up! We can't stop here. This is black pudding country."
Alex raises his jug again.
"After you." "It was much easier in the club,"
Dick complains after a minute, as they round the street corner and head for where he's left his car.
"Did it occur to you that if you go to a club and chat someone up, there's a good chance that they're there to pull, or to serve a minor reminder of their pull ability on their boyfriend?"
Alex has been thinking about this subject a lot lately.
"Bah!"
Dick raises his car key and pings the button to open the doors on his Porsche Boxster.
"Hey, these won't fit under the bonnet. So, put them behind the seats."
Alex walks around to the passenger side and begins to load his jugs into the back of the sports car.
"But if they leak, you'll just get blood on the carpet, right?"
"Ah, fuck it. Okay, next stop, the office."
Alex glances out of the windscreen nervously. There are still a couple of hours to go until sunrise, but this is London, and the traffic is capricious and potentially deadly to vampires.
Hit it! I can't wait to try this.
Later.
Ah!
Jesus fuck, that was disgusting.
Spitting sounds. Have you finished there?
Give me a minute. I need to floss my teeth. Again. That was gross.
How are we scoring?
0 for 3. Pigs don't make me puke. Cows, essence of fragrant bullshit. Sheep, well, I kind of like mutton, but not like that, you know?
And the black pudding
tastes a lot better deep fried, doesn't it?
You are not shitting me. That leaves the goat and the control sample. Oh dear.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I don't know. Are you thinking goats are kind of like sheep with bad attitude? I'm not a fucking chupacabra, man. And maybe we should use a control sample just to be sure that, well, you know.
Blood works.
Something like that.
That's what I'm thinking too.
Okay, let's see. We get about 2 teaspoons each. Human blood, 2 hours old.
Oh.
Oh, Jesus. Ah!
Pause.
Well, fuck me sideways.
It just did, didn't it? Oh, man, I've got to sit down. I feel weak at the knees.
Wow.
You know what this means, of course.
We just ruled out the main vertebrates, haven't we? Of course, it might be because the donors are dead, but...
You want us to go find ourselves a farm and suck on a live sheep?
We could, but I'm not getting a good idea vibe from that thought. Let's put it on the to-do list.
You can if you want to, but I'm getting a feeling that it's got to be live human blood all the way. How about you?
Sigh.
Well, fuck.
Summary. This is what we have learned.
Mary has the baton. Actually, a chrome-plated blue laser pointer, the stopwatch, and the whiteboard. She's running this as a sprint review meeting for Oscar, who sits in the hemispheric evil overlord chair opposite the far end of the boardroom table.
Evan, what did you and Alex learn from Jesus stuff?
Evan stands, glances down at his tablet. We can enter churches. Crosses and religious symbols have no effect on us. I took Holy Communion without any ill effects. I was unable to acquire a sample of holy water, but I think we can reasonably expect it to have no effect. We tested a Church of England church, a Roman Catholic cathedral, a Reformed Jewish synagogue, and a Jehovah's Witness meeting room. If you want us to continue, Alex and I have identified a mosque and a Sheikh temple, but we'll need a pretext or disguise. Oh, and afterwards we ate out, Italian with garlic bread as a starter. He looks at Mary expectantly. Mary, for her part, takes a green post-it note and plants it on the whiteboard, under the Done column, adjacent to the Jesus Stuff row. She smiles happily.
Strike one.
She turns to Janice.
What about blood bank? This is going to take a while. Short version. Oh, God, yes, human blood. Unfortunately, getting it isn't going to be as easy as walking into a hematology lab and walking out with a six-pack. Blood is expensive enough that it's ordered centrally on a named patient basis. On the other hand, it turns out we don't need much of it, and, oh my God, it's lovely. Let me see.
Janice runs through her checklist and Mary adds new post-it notes in exciting shades of magenta and cyan to the whiteboard under the to-do and testing columns. Finally, Janice runs down, reserves of information sucked dry. Evan maintains a leathery silence throughout, punctuated by significant glances in the direction of Oscar, whose expression is one of distant longing, almost hunger. Mary's expression, too, is fixed. They'd shared the final sample tube, enough to confirm its importance.
Blood. Mary nods to herself. Thank you, Janice. So I guess this means we're back to hitting on the cleaning staff or getting creative with the mind control thing. John, Dick, did you get any endurance and scope metrics from your experiments?
I'll take this.
John gives Dick a warning look, but Dick merely slouches in his chair, an expression of feline bliss on his saggy face. He is clearly sleep-deprived and unshaven.
Dick pulled, he announces, 2 nights running. In fact, on our first time out, Dick walked straight past the bouncers at Vertigo 42, dressed as he is now. A ripple of disbelief runs around the room. Then walked up to a Russian oligarch, outstared his bodyguards, and asked the guy's mistress, quote, "Hey, babe, how about we go and play Mr. Policeman Hides His Truncheon," unquote. Yes, he scored.
John is visibly quivering with outrage at this affront to his imagination.
On the way out, he picked up an aspiring model as well.
Dick yawns, stretches his arms above his head, and shakes his head.
All it takes is imagining that I'm Austin Powers. Sheer animal magnetism. Hey, baby.
He looks smug.
They were looking for action. I just upped my visibility.
From brown dwarf to supernova by the look of it, Alex thinks.
Did you take them home? He asks.
Do I look stupid? I took them to Claridge's, on Mr. Petrov's dime.
He grunts. Bodyguards turning up on my doorstep the next morning. Do not want. Janice shakes her head.
It's the fucking end times, she husks. Dick scoring. Anything else?
Mary adds sharply.
Yeah.
John looks pensive.
I went back to check an hour later. They tried to keep it discreet, but there was a bit of a heated argument, and the bouncers, the bodyguards, and Mr. Petrov all went home in ambulances. I don't know exactly what Dick told them to do to each other when they got in his face, but this mind-control mojo needs a light touch.
I got the blood samples by telling the duty hematologist to draw the samples from her own left arm and give them to me,
Janice adds.
If I told her to cut her wrist, I'm not sure she wouldn't have done it.
Mary adds another green post-it to the board, against brainwashing. She turns back to the table.
Dick?
Yeah?
Stand on your head, please, in the corner, right now.
Dick sits where he is and stares at her quizzically.
Make me.
Go and...
Mary's eyes narrow. Then she glances at John.
We seem to be immune. I told Dick not to do it, but he wasn't listening.
You were right, though. They were too bony, and they didn't like each other at all. I could tell.
Animal!
Dyke.
That's enough, children.
Mary raises her voice, and Dick and Janice succumb to an aggrieved, resentful silence. But Mary is watching Oscar. His displeasure is muted for now, but evident. Now he stands and clears his throat.
Policy directive. We seem to have considerable scope for, making friends and influencing people, and also for doing them damage. I don't think that's a good idea, because, leaving all questions of morality aside, it's likely to draw attention to us. And as for questions of morality...
Janice stares daggers at Dick.
What you did is borderline indistinguishable from date rape. So...
Hey, they were on the pool!
Dick protests.
Nevertheless, I'll thank you to not do that. Obviously, there are exceptions. If someone tries to mug you on your way to work, for example, or starts asking questions about what the scrum is doing this week, but you will avoid using this particular talent for trivial ends or in public. Am I understood?
Everybody nods. Even Dick, although his expression is mutinous. Are there any questions? Janice's hand goes up.
Blood!
She says simply.
We'll get to it when we loop back to planning, after the retrospective. Are you okay with that?
He stares at her.
Copacetic,
she mutters bitterly.
Good.
Oscar sits down. Back to you, Mary.
Okay.
Mary beams at the scrum. Her crimson lip gloss glistens beneath the spotlights.
Quickly, protective clothing and latex masks. Direct sunlight burns us within seconds. I'm talking third-degree burns here, very nasty stuff. You do not want to shine a UV torch on your skin, either. We're photosensitive. We can see in the dark, and I notice everyone's got constricted pupils in office lighting conditions. On the other hand, we heal really fast. A 1 millimeter deep cut in the skin actually heals in about an hour without scarring. Burns, similarly. That which does not kill us seems not to harm us too badly. And clothing, anything that blocks the sunlight, works fine.
Mary takes a step back and raises her skirt to flash her left knee. Look. She's wearing opaque black tights.
I stuck my leg in a sunbeam. After about a minute, it was tingling and painful, but that's all. I exposed the back of my wrist to the same sunbeam and had a first-degree burn with blistering after 2 seconds. So it doesn't take much fabric.
She smooths down her skirt, then picks up a carrier bag from beside her chair.
So then I went looking for an emergency kit, and I came up with this.
She reaches into the bag and pulls out a mass of black fabric.
This is a jilbab with niqab. That's the face veil and gloves. The only skin it doesn't cover is the eyes.
She rummages in the bottom of the bag and pulls out a pair of wraparound shades.
And that's what these are for. It's not much fun, but I walked about for a quarter of an hour in daylight yesterday, and I only got burned on the bridge of my nose. I recommend we all get two of these and keep one by our desk and one at home as emergency escape kits. Sorry, gents, I know it doesn't go with your self-image, but look at it this way. Blood-sucking bankers in burkas could be next summer's hot new fashion.
What about the latex? Asks Oscar.
I'm still working on it.
Mary makes a moo of concentration.
Turns out we're looking for theatrical special effects cosmetics. I know where to buy it, but getting it right is another matter. We might need to hire a professional makeup artist.
She scribbles a couple of post-it notes, green for the done column, pink for the to-do list.
Anyway, that brings us to about the end of our current review. To sum up, we can move fast and heal fast. We're inflammable in daylight, and we can't see ourselves in mirrors. But we're still there, and we show up on video. We still need to eat, and we can eat garlic. Crosses and holy water don't repel us. We have amazing powers of persuasion, but we can't use them on each other. And, human blood is amazing. Other species, not so much.
Her eyes are wide as she looks down the meeting table, then makes contact with Oscar.
So, boss, where do we go with this now?